is discussing a principle from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar Devotion, some notes. And the principle here is that love liberates. Liberates means to free. Free one, to liberate one. So if we have love, we have genuine or pure love, real love for someone, then we become liberated. So let's hear some of these points. In the material world, if we have intense love for someone, if you actually love someone intensely, then you will like to serve that person. And when you serve that person whom you love, you feel good about it. Does everyone agree? Mm-hmm. Yes. You take pleasure in serving that person. You enjoy being with that person. You feel like surrendering to that person. It is natural. People are afraid of surrender. But if you love somebody, you gladly surrender. You'll do anything for that person. You want to give everything you have to that person. That's why love liberates you. Because liberate means to, like if someone liberates you from your money, that means they take all your money. Like life members, member makers are very good at that. Liberating you from your money. So this is love, it liberates you because it takes everything out of you. You give everything to the other person. You want to serve them, be with them. Give your time to them, give your body to them, give your words to them, and you feel good about it. Feel happy about it. So love itself is the cause of liberation. That's why by loving Krishna, which is our prema, this is our yoga, this is the yoga of prema yoga. Prema yoga and prema yoga. Bhakti yoga is prema yoga. Bhakti yoga means prema yoga. Prema means love. And so we don't have to endeavor in a separate direction to attain liberation or mukti. Dharma, art, kam, moksha. Everyone's trying in the Vedic paradigm or Vedic civilization. Everyone was endeavoring for freedom, liberation. They wanted to get free from their distresses and find a higher, a better position, position of happiness. But the Rupa Goswami is saying it's love itself which liberates. And when if you have love here and now, you're liberated here and now. He says, Karmana Manasagira. You become Haridas. You can only serve someone you love, genuinely serve someone. So when we actually love Hari, or we try to love, and then we serve Karmana Manasagira. Karmana means our actions. Manasa means our thoughts. Thinking, feeling, we feel for our beloved, we think of our beloved, we act, we will for our beloved. Thinking, feeling, and willing. Karmana manasa gira. Gira means speech. Gir, long eye, gir. Gira means speech. So we speak to please our beloved, we sing to please our beloved. We glorify our beloved. Oh, you don't know how great my wife is, she's such a good cook, oh Prabhu. You could eat my wife's cooking, you would just die. You know? it's so good. Or, you know, she's such a good helper, this, that, the other thing. And she encourages me. She lifts me up when I'm down. She makes me smile when I frown. And all these things that people say in about their wives or husbands. So, you don't feel attached to anything. Love liberates you. Whatever you have, you can give. You can give it to the person whom you love. Willfully. I mean, usually husbands say they love wives and wives say they love husbands. And wives are always saying, well, give me this, give me that. And he says, well, I don't know, wait a minute. Well, there's real love. He says, yeah, take everything, all my money, everything, whatever I have.
Before marriage.
Yeah, before marriage. He was also married. Voice of experience. So you don't feel attached to anything. Whatever you. So that's what liberation means. There's no attachments. You're liberated, you're mukti, you're free. So if you have love, you don't feel attached to anything. Whatever you have, you can give it to the person whom you love. And you feel happy with that. Sometimes we give charity to some institution or some person, but we don't like it. We just have to do it. Someone comes around, oh, look, we're raising funds for the Little League or the children's thing or this or that. Everyone in the neighborhood is giving, so what are you going to give? What am I going to give? Oh, okay. Not too much. I guess I have to give something. Okay, what did my brother give? Your brother gave 10,000. Oh, he gave 10,000? Was he drunk or something or what? No. Oh, he gave 10,000. Yes, and your father gave 25. Oh, sure. So what are you going to give? Well, I give 1,000. Hey, 1,000, what is this 1,000? Oh, excuse me. You're an Agarwal. You're going to let your name go down like this? Okay, put me down for 5. Okay, 5. But you don't like it. Because you don't love that person. But if we're in love with somebody, you feel so happy to give when the other person, you feel so happy to give when the other person takes. Therefore, Rupa Goswami says, there are 6 ways to express preeti or love. This is how love expresses itself and manifests. The manifestation of love means to give. So he says to dati pratigrinati, nectar of instruction. He says to give gifts, to receive gifts, to give prasadam, to reveal your mind, to help another to hear them. So he's saying like, this is how love expresses itself. And the manifestation of love means to give. Just like in lust you want to take. Lust you want to take, grab, take, exploit, have, hold, steal, possess, control. You are my wife. You are my husband. I control you, I possess you. This is lust. You want to have, you want to hold for yourself. But in love you want to give. So, for example, if someone hoards too much money, you say, oh, he's a very lusty person or a very greedy person. In other words, if he wants to grab all the ladies in town and have all the ladies in town, he's a ladies' man, he's a very lusty man. Or you say, if he's always trying to catch money here and there and everywhere and cheating everyone to get more and more money, you say, oh, he's a very greedy man. He's always collecting so much money, he never gives any money to anything. Even his grandmother let her die rather than give any money for her operation. He's very greedy. So people, but in love, you want to give. When you love someone, your heart opens. But in lust, lust makes your heart compressed and close up. You become completely bound. You become completely bound up with your body. Your consciousness centers only around your body. You become very circumscribed. You become a very narrow personality. A lusty person. You're my wife, and you're only for me, and you can't go with anybody else, and you can't serve anyone else, and you have to stay in these 4 walls, and you can't go outside of these 4 walls. Oh, I want to do some good things for others. I want to open a free clinic and give free medicine. No, you can't go out of the house. I want to help others. No, it's like this, circumscribed. Like we were saying the other day, that love means accommodation, not strangulation. Right? We said that. So love means accommodation. Give me lots of room. This is love. But it doesn't mean strangulation. I love you. You strangle. So love blooms your heart. You become very open. Lord Chaitanya is called Namo Mahavaranyaya, the Varanyaya avatar. Most munificent incarnation of the Lord. What does munificent mean? May not even know. This Varanyaya. Nomo Mahavaranyaya. Mahavaranyaya. He's the Mahavaranyaya avatar. This means the most munificent. What does it mean? It means most open-hearted. The most giving. The most broad-minded. Broad-minded. You can't have a broad mind unless you have a broad heart. Broad mind means that your heart is expanded and includes thinking about everyone. But if your heart is lusty, you're only thinking about your own body and your own pleasure, then you can only think about yourself. When your heart opens up, then you think about others. heart, blossoming of heart and expanding of mind go side by side. So why is he munificent? Because Lord Chaitanya is the giving avatar. He's giving. That is the nature of love. And he's giving love. Therefore, he's the most munificent. Right? He's giving love. Because love is the highest, greatest thing you can give. We say Mahavaranyaya means to give, and Mahavaranyaya means Varanyaya means munificent, giving, charitable, welfare, beneficial. So we say Maha means he's the greatest giver. So what's the greatest thing you can give someone? Like someone may have $1 million, like they have a phrase in English. What can you give the man who has everything? We have a phrase like this in English. What can you give the man who has everything? It's your husband's birthday. He has 500 crores in the bank and 200 crores in his back pocket. And you're thinking, what can I buy him? You know, he has 5 Porsche cars, 3 Rolls Royces, 3 Learjets, 2 helicopters, 5 speedboats, 1 ocean liner. And you're thinking, what can I give? What could I give him? A lollipop? Actually, if you give him a lollipop for 1 rupee, or a sucker, whatever you call it around here, and it was with love, he may appreciate that more than all his Learjets, which means a private jet, Learjet. So this is the point. What do you give the man who has everything? Because the greatest thing you can give, he may have everything but love. And the greatest personalities, the most beautiful, famous heroes and heroines of the silver screen, they often commit suicide because they never got love. Never received genuine love. Plenty of men came forward to exploit their bodies, or women to exploit the men. Or someone may be a crore pati or a rubber pati or whatever you call it. What do they call it? Arab pati? Arab? The Arab patis? Arab patis? The Arabs are Arabs, alright? That's why they call them Arabs. Is that why they call them Arabs? Because they're Arab putties. The Arabs are the Arab putties. Because they have all the money. So you may have all the money, and still you commit suicide. Swallow a bottle of sleeping pills. So you don't wake up. It happens all the time. Because they're missing this thing, the greatest gift. What Lord Chaitanya is giving, that they don't have. So he's giving the highest, greatest thing you can give. So service, to serve someone, is natural. It's a natural component of love. You take joy in doing service and you forget about time. Now think about this. You take joy in doing service and you forget about time. We love Srila Prabhupada. And we knew it was his desire to put on the Ratha Yatra in San Francisco. So we were serving there for 6 years. 6 Ratha Yatras, the original Jagannath deities, Karabai Shamasundar. Yeah. The first Ratha Yatra was, of course, there in 67 with the same deities, and subsequently every year thereafter with the same deities in different carts. First was a flatbed truck that they rented from the diggers. The diggers were a name of a group of hippies that were doing welfare work for other hippies in Haight-Ashbury, near Golden Gate Park. And the temple itself was on Frederick Street, which was near Buena Vista Park and the Panhandle. Golden Gate Park. My brother lived there on Frederick Street. I went there in 1968, Frederick Street, 1 year after the temple was open. Yeah. And I was 17 years old, I guess, 68. And that was a very interesting coincidence. My brother is living on Frederick Street, 512 Frederick Street, and temple is on 127 or something, Frederick Street. And every day I would come out of my brother's apartment, it was a courtyard type, like Indian type thing, open in the middle and four like that, Spanish building. And I would come out and turn left and go to Buena Vista Park. I was there for 1 month on a winter vacation, Christmas vacation from high school or whatever, I don't know where it was. But I never turned right. If I turned right, I would have met, if I went the right way, I would have met A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami in Frederick Street. when my fortune was not there. Until, that was 67, it wasn't until 7 years later I got to see Srila Prabhupada in Los Angeles. So, this is the nature that we're speaking about, this Rath Yatra festival, that service is natural, and if you, when you're engaged in Krishna's service, you don't know that, or any service really, that serving someone you love, you don't notice the passage of time. You, hour after hour after hour, you're serving Krishna, and, oh my God, it's sun's going down. Oh, I thought it was only 11 o'clock in the morning. So anyway, Hare Krishna. And you don't feel any lamentation or any loss. Oh, I lost this time, or I lost this. Oh, I'm very happy I was here and doing this service. So when you're absorbed in serving, there's no feeling of time. By performing Uttam Bhakti, you transcend material bondage. By advancing in bhakti, we feel more and more pleasure in serving. The material world, people want to retire. They want to retire and they want people to work for them. But in the spiritual world, work is play. Right? Like we say the karmis are working. They're doing karma. But we're doing seva. So they're sweeping floors, we're sweeping floors. They're mopping floors, we're mopping floors. They're chopping vegetables in the restaurants, we're chopping vegetables. They're cooking, we're cooking. They're singing songs and cinema songs, and we're singing songs in glorification of Krishna. Many activities very similar. But we don't find that this is work. We find that this is our play. Once a newspaper reporter interviewed Prabhupada and about said, what do your devotees, I see your devotees in New York, they're chanting on the street corner, they're selling your books and magazines, and they're holding the functions in the temple, because she was a newspaper reporter, so she did some observation. Or she was a Time magazine, actually, writer. But Swamiji, listen, I have one question. What do your devotees, as she said, as some people say like this, Prabhupada coined the pronunciation devotee, but generally, because it's a French word, many people, educated people, say devotee, the devotee, and the deities of the Lord. So, devotee. And so, what do your devotees do for recreation? I mean, you know, Swamiji, you know, to lighten up, to relax a little bit, and to let off some steam, and have a good time. As they work so hard, selling those magazines every day, and chanting, jumping up and down, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and cooking for 300, 400, 500 people, and chopping, 6, 7 hours chopping carrots and potatoes. I guess a little tedious, a little fatiguing, tiring. And Prabhupada said, first thing he said is, actually, our devotees are not so fickle. Fickle means that they're changeable, or they need to have so many changes, this thing, that thing. And then he said, no, and then she rephrased her question. She said, but I mean, what do your devotees do? I mean, for fun, to have fun. And then Prabhupada, he said, actually, everything we do is recreation. Everything we do is recreation. This is the International Society for Recreation. he said because there's no work, so therefore it's told in the spiritual world work is play. Everyone serves and works for the happiness of the Supreme Lord Krishna. In devotional service, our work is play. What is the difference between work and play? Exactly. You work for a goal. You work to make money. You do something, whatever thing, work or rob or something. You do something to get money. Or position. You work to get some position. Or to get some glory, maybe you help in the some time of distress, some hurricane or disaster, and you go and work and help the sick people or whatever, and then you get gold medal or purple heart or some type of glory, some fame. But in devotion, work itself is the end. Like some people say, well, you do this bhakti, then what do you get at the end? And you get more bhakti. Like a new devotee joins the temple and he serves very nicely, so the temple commander says, oh Prabhu, you're doing a very nice job, you know, you've been sweeping the temple, so now we're very happy with you, so now we want you to sweep the temple and cut up all the vegetables for the lunch program for 7,000 people. So then the Bhakta Joe says, oh wow, great! Bhakti yoga. I'm so lucky. What a lucky guy I am. More service. More. So the devotees, work itself is the end. Nothing is separate. And we have nothing separate. Nothing separate comes out of it. Everything is included in the work itself. In devotion, we want more devotion. The devotee wants more and more work. It's just like, it's so pleasurable that he doesn't want it to end. In fact, I can remember sometimes working, or whatever, doing service, whatever you want to call it, working for Rath Yatra, Jagannath's Rath Yatra in San Francisco, day and night, running here and there, so many activities, so many services. And then, when Rath Yatra was over, everybody was lamenting in the temple, oh, there's nothing to do around here. I mean, that was too much fun. I mean, we forgot, we actually started to think we were spirit souls for a few minutes, or a few days. We forgot about eating, we didn't know where we were catching a bite of food here and there, whatever. And sleeping, it just happened, you know, when we were driving a car or whatever it was. We sleep a few weeks on the highway, you know. And Krishna would, it's amazing how Krishna can, you know, like we have these, you know, automatic pilot. I mean, so many times, as anyone has done traveling Sankirtan, or they have the experience, they see the mile marker 127 on the road, and 142. This is not somebody told me. I had direct experience because I was on traveling Sankirtan. I was driving also. Everybody takes a turn. And all the different drivers would say, they take turns driving night shift 8 hours at a time or something, go from here to there, so many states and that's and that. And they would recount it. Yeah, Maharaja Prabhu, you know, whatever. And I was driving and said, you were awake? Yeah, most of the time I was awake. Out of the 400 miles I drove, at least 200 I was awake. Krishna drove the other 200. But the karmis, they go out for like 5 seconds and the car is totaled. Really, they have phrases like, God is my co-pilot. And devotees have that experience. So this is, when you're working, serving Krishna, working for Krishna, the time stands still. It doesn't become a significant factor, and then you look forward almost practically to those times of just completely absorbed in Krishna's service. Festivals are a great time for experiencing the mercy of Krishna. So concluding on this point here is that the innate desire of the living entity is to have loving relationship with someone. But attempts to fulfill this primordial desire with material persons and material relationships always, invariably, without a doubt, and always, and forever always, fails. All the modern technology that we have, this palm top and, you know, laptop and head top and tip top and whatever kind of top, whatever kind of tops you have. All this technology, it takes people further and further away from themselves. And results, and what does it result in? All this technology and so-called infotech, and little trinkets and gadgets and trinkets and so-called energy savers and time savers and organizers and all these things. What is the result? It results in tension, anxiety, confusion, and dissatisfaction. We want to realize our own potential to attain pure love for the topmost personality, God. But we're wasting this potential by looking for persons in this material world to love. The ideal person is Krishna. Why? Because he has all the attractive qualities. Lord Chaitanya has introduced the process of Raghunuga Bhakti to help conditioned souls attain love for the Supreme Person. If we desire to be with loving people with pure hearts, in other words, when you read about these personalities in the spiritual world, if we desire to be with loving people with pure hearts, like the Rigatmika devotees of Braj, then we will follow the Brijbasis Bhav and their mood of seva. Computers and technologies give everything but love. Love is a sentiment of the consciousness. It's not produced by machines. All these inventions isolate people from each other. And because of this distance, there's no closeness and there's no love. Remember in the old days, in these offices, you go in an office and there'd be so many desks, and everybody's desk is kind of put all together, and everyone has their tables and their little tiffin sitting there, and they're working and they're talking, chit-chatting and working. Now you go in these offices, because they have all these people that, programmers and office designers, they make these cubicles and make a wall like this. They put these two walls and there's a computer. And there's a wall in front, so you can't see the guy in the front, you can't see left or right, just like horses. They put these blinders on the horses. So the horse sees a little something on the side, he gets jittery. Horses are very jittery. And I never understood that so much, because we had some horses when I grew up. My dad just had these things. But the guy across the street, he has horses. So I went to pet him on the nose, because he has a long nose. He's like a baby horse or a pony or something. So I just moved my hand like this, and he started moving his head just by seeing something coming from the side. His eyes were like this, and I was just coming, slowly, not aggressively, because I know that, it was like they're jittery. So I just came, as soon as he saw something like on the side, his hand, he just started getting all jittery like this. I said, "Wow!" I said, "Hey, relax, Jack." So then I came from the nose, I didn't come from the eye side. I came up below his nose. Then I went up like that and got his nose and it was touching him. Because his eyes are like up here, right? So I didn't come from any of this peripheral side. I came from blind side. I came up under his nose and I got him like this and said, "It's okay, it's cool." And then I went further up his nose. Then he was like, "Okay, you're cool," And he was like this. And then he was like happy, It's funny. They're just like, whereas cows, other animals, if you're gentle, they don't get all so out of it, So this is, they're making people like horses. They put blinders on them. You go in these offices and you can't see anybody. Everybody's dropped into these little cubicles. New disc is that, And they can't talk to anybody next to them. And then the boss brings them coffee, gives them a shot of drugs. Every 3 hours gives them a drug shot. It keeps them drugged up. Because their performance goes down a little bit. It's like hamsters running on a little thing. They run for an hour and then they get a little tired and they give them a little pellet. And they run around this little wheel, these little, like rats in a pet shop. They have these little metal wheels they run around. Hamsters, like a little rat type. Then they give them a little pellet of food. They come in at 9 o'clock, and then 11 o'clock, and then the guy comes around, the little peon guy, gives you a little cup, here's your tea, and then they force it to you. Okay, thank you. They go like this. I watch them. They go like this, and they put it on the tray. They don't even look. They put it in the guy. He just waits. They take the drug. Here, take the drug. Okay, drug shot. Okay. And the whole people are all completely drugged up. And then no one gets to talk. No one talks to each other. And then they come at 5 o'clock. Dun, just like turn. Everyone's just like a robot. So people are starving for relationships, starving for love. There's so much. There's no closeness. No one has any closeness or any feelings for each other. But Lord Chaitanya has introduced this Braj Bhakti to read about the Brijvasis, hear about their loving dealings, how they're so funny and so playful and so many varieties of so much closeness, so much intimacy, so many loving exchanges. Then we can appreciate and become attracted to following their moods. And this is the basis of the entrance for this Rag Bhakti.
We make Krishna separate, which should be the opposite.
Yeah.
But acquiring that love for Krishna is sometimes very difficult.
Yeah. Well, it's not so difficult, but it's because we're talking about the personal exchange that. As when we initiated this discussion, we said it's easy to serve someone you love, and you like to give to someone you love. If you love someone, you give them everything willfully. So as we get to know Krishna, everyone has some individual relationship with the Lord, and by serving, by surrendering, it's not so difficult as you make it out to be. As we surrender and serve Lord, then because He's in everyone's heart, He's expanded there as Paramatma, then He reciprocates. And then when we individually feel His presence, then we can move in our relationship with Him. As you say it's easy to love those that are immediately near us or around us, mother, father, husband, children. Because we see them, we can feel them, we can perceive them, so we serve them and we feel the reciprocation. But serving God, He seems somewhat distant or removed from us. But that distance is easily reduced by surrender. Surrender is what brings God close to the heart. So this is what Krishna is saying. He's revealing the secret of His heart in Gita. As you surrender unto Me, I reward you accordingly. So this is it. This is the keynote. If you want to feel God's presence more, because you can't really serve someone if you don't know them and you don't feel their presence. Like someone says, "Oh, serve the man across the street." Well, you say, "Well, who is that? I don't know them. I don't feel their presence." But when you feel the presence of Krishna and you feel the proximity of the Lord, then it's easier to serve Him. And when you endeavor to serve Him through the medium of a deity, He can manifest His presence. He can manifest His presence in your own mind. As a result, they say deity can appear, a deity in the mind, Manasamurti, or deity made of Daru, made of wood, or Ashtadhatu, 8 different metals. So you can feel Krishna's presence in your mind or in your heart. So I think that everyone, those that feel the presence of the Lord most, are those who surrender most to the Lord. Right? That's what Krishna says: "As you surrender unto Me, I reward you." Reward means surrender means you're giving more of yourself to God, your time, your words, your heart, your feelings, your thoughts. As you do more of that, then He says, "Okay, I'll give more of My time and thoughts to you." So that's what everyone will experience. When you first join, you're trying to figure out what is this Krishna? What is He? Where is He? How does He walk? Where is He? What is His program? Then everything is, you're searching. You're searching, trying to find this person. So it's hard to love someone until you find them.
Yes.
It's like a woman may have a capacity to love a man, or whatever we want to call it, but she has to search one and find one. and she finds one, then she can express that tendency to love or serve. So as jivas, we have a tendency, or at least a potential. This is one thing that everyone agrees on. Because I was having some discussion with some Gaudiya Vaishnavas who have some different ideas about whether there's sthayi bhava, fixed sthayi bhava in the jiva, or it's nityasiddha bhavasya that comes from outside. Different conceptions about this. I said, well, that means that if you say that this bhava comes from outside, then the jiva has no, and the jiva has no ananda shakti. Because ananda shakti means the ability, such an ananda. Ananda shakti is a portion, means a ladini shakti. There's different ways to describe these shaktis. Samvit, sandini, and ladini. Samvit, that is chit. Sandini is sat. And ladini is anand, such an anand. I said that the jiva has no anand because he's part and parcel of Krishna or God, Vishnu, whatever. Then how can he have any kind of loving relationship at any point, whether the spiritual body is in the spiritual world and it's awarded to him or given to him, or whether it's within him and he realizes it? If he has no anand, because anand or ladini shakti's ability to love God or receive love. Listen, the Radharani is that. So then I said, so what is your idea? What is it? Jiva is just a blip? It's just a particle of sat and chit? The jiva is eternal. He's the eternal conscious entity, but now his awareness or his consciousness of himself is covered by ignorance. So he's in avidya. But he removes the avidya, then he realizes the eternal aspect and is cognizant. He's eternally aware. He's eternal, the jiva is eternal, and he's eternally aware when he's enlightened. I said, is that all there is? He said, no. Even though he's agreeing. He said, well, we also believe that every jiva has the potential to love God. So as soon as you say that, then that potential, that energy, or that shakti which expresses that potential is anand. So I was explaining like that. I said, well, we don't see it like that. I said, okay, well, Hare Krishna. But this is how my guru explained it. So the common point of harmony was that they say, Prabhupada said that once to a devotee. The disciple came and said, Prabhupada, the scientists, they say. And Prabhupada said, you say, they say, but I say. We, the Vedic seers, the seers of the truth, the Mahajans and the Acharyas, you say, they say, and I say, we say. Well, Prabhupada, material scientists say that the sun is further than the moon. But you, the Bhagavatam says differently. And so Prabhupada said, well, you say, they say, I say, we say. So who do you believe? They say or we say? So everyone says that the jiva has a potential to love God. So we have to search that Krishna. Search for that Krishna that's hiding
invisible.
From you.
Invisible also.
He's invisible and visible. He has aprakat lila and prakat lila. Lila is going on, always, eternally. So we may see and we may not see. Now you see me, now you don't. So we have to search, and sadhana means searching. S for sadhana and S for searching. Searching for Krishna. The Goswamis taught that also. They came to Vrindavan to do what? Search for Krishna. Hey Radhe Raja Devi Ke Chalalite Hey Nanda Sunakuta Shri Govardhana Kalpapada Patale Kalindi Vanya Kuta Goshanta Viti Sarvato Vrajapure Kadir Mahabivalo Vande Rupa Sanatana Raguyago Sri Jiva Gopalako. This is our beloved Shiksha Guru and God brother Srila Prabhupada, Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Dev Goswami used to say. And what he said, he had one book called The Loving Search for the Lost Servant. I actually heard one discussion where he was discussing with Akshayananda about the title of this upcoming book. This was years ago, in the 1980s. And this was a series of lectures, of course, about bhakti. And he said that this devotee was helping him. Akshayananda was Prabhupada's disciple. His name became Sagar Maharaj. He was suggesting it should be the search for the servant. God's search for the servant. Something like that. And then Sridhar Maharaj said, no. But I insisted that it's the loving search for the lost servant. And then there was some discussion about Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Gopu Kumar is traveling throughout the universe searching for the Lord of his mantra. Mantra Ishtadev, or Mantra Ishta. Or you can say Mantra Devata, rather. The term is Mantra Devata. And he was chanting Gopal Mantra, the 10-syllable Gopal Mantra. There's a 24-syllable Gopal Mantra and a 10-syllable Gopal Mantra. So he was chanting Om Klim Gopi Vallabhaya Swaha. Gopi Vallabhaya Swaha. Gopi Vallabhaya Swaha. 10 syllables. Klim Gopi Vallabhaya Swaha. Right? No, but it has to be sanctioned. Acceptance. No submission, no permission. No permission, no admission.
No admission.
Submission, permission, admission. So, this is the Goswamis were teaching like this, Rupa Goswami. Who are they teaching? They were teaching us. Because Rupa Goswami is Rupa Manjari, Sanat Goswami is Lavanga Manjari. So the six Manjaris came, Che Manjaris. When Lord Chaitanya came back from East Bengal, he was preaching in East Bengal. He was not preaching, actually. At this time he was teaching Sanskrit. He was married to Lakshmi Priya, his first wife, and he went off to East Bengal, which is modern-day Bangladesh, or Bangladesh, I guess it's Bangladesh. And he was teaching Sanskrit over there, and the people in East Bengal at that time, they had a particular dialect of Bengali that they spoke. It was kind of country hick or something. And Navadvip was the center of learning. At least the scholars and historians say that Navadvip was the center of learning for the whole eastern India, from Bengal to Orissa to Andhra to Tamil, all this whole area, this was like the center. Of course, as you moved further west, you became to Benares. Benares was another independent center of learning. But this whole sector, east and south, and even going north, of course, north of Bengal, this was a great center of learning. That's why the Kashmiri Pandit, Keshav, his name is Pandit Keshav, but he's from Kashmir. So that's like saying the Bombay Pandit. Well, the Bombay Pandit came to Delhi. The Kashmiri Pandit's name is Keshav Pandit. Pandit Keshav, whatever, Goswami or whatever, Bhargava or whatever his name was. So he came, he understood that Navadvip is where all the big shots are. That's where all the learned, the pundits and the Chaturvedis and the Bhattacharyas and the Mishras and all the heavy dudes are in Sanskrit. So he went there to challenge the finest in town, and he wanted to get a Jayapatra, a victory, signed victory letter. So he went there and everybody said, oh, you know, he came into town with all his books in his bags and stuff, and everybody became intimidated because he's famous Keshav Kashmiri. But then Nimai Pandit, Nimai was down at the banks of the Yamuna, and the Pandit, Kashmiri Pandit, came down to bathe and worship Ganga Devi, Gangama, and do puja there. Then he became very attracted to the beautiful aura and demeanor, handsome form of Nimai Pandit, the child scholar, the child genius, the brilliant scholar, the Pandit. And he, by chance, they met and exchanged some words of respect, of course. Lord Chaitanya respected him as a great scholar, as a senior Brahmin, and as a Yatri and a famous person coming to Navadvip. And then you know the story, of course. He asked him to recite some verses in glorification of Ganga, who was right there. And he did. It was 100 verses.
3 hours.
It took 3 hours. 100 verses of four pad, char pad, four lines. Explaining like this. And Lord Chaitanya was sitting there, Nimai Pandit rather, was sitting there. And then after he was done, he said, how was it? He said, oh, it was very nice, very, very beautiful. The chandas, the meter was very nice, and everything was very beautiful. But, in Shloka 61, and Shloka 82, line number 2, and the last word was feminine, it was supposed to be masculine. And why did you know, there was a disagreement here between the noun and the verb. The Pandit was like, wow, all right. And he was duly dumbfounded and defeated by the child genius, Nimai Pandit. And then, of course, he had a swapna of Saraswati, and she said, you're worshipping me, but my Lord is Nimai Pandit. He is my Lord. All my power, everything comes from him. And like this. So the Goswamis, they taught this. They were such great personalities, but they came to Vrindavan teaching, searching for Krishna. So this continuation of the same topic about, we were talking about this principle, how in love, if you love someone, then you like to serve them. You don't consider, and you don't even notice the passage of time. So the whole idea of bhakti is to find that ultimate person whom we can direct our love to, who is Krishna. And I was saying, the loving search for the lost servant. So Gopakumara, I was explaining how he was chanting his mantra, his 10-syllable Gopal mantra, and he was searching for the devata, that mantra, Gopal, right? He was searching, where is my Gopal? And he was going here and there and here and there. And finally, he found Gopal. And Gopal embraced him. And then he said, oh, I've been waiting for you for so long. I've been searching for you. Because actually, as we begin our search for the Lord, for Krishna, he begins his search for us. He starts searching for us. It's kind of like two people looking for each other, wandering. You know, they're wandering around. Say the mother goes shopping, and she leaves the son in the car. She said, I'll be back in about an hour. And she parks in this parking lot of a big mall. And then about 5 hours goes by. And she's wrapped up in just going crazy inside the mall. Going from shop to shop to shop. Then the son is like, he doesn't have any watch or any cell phone or anything. It's like old time children. No, old days. No cell phone to call mom. Hey, where are you? He's just stuck in the car. No cell phone or anything. And no watch. And he's saying, oh, it's so long. Where's my mother been? It's been days and hours. And he's a young boy. He's a very frightened young boy, 5 years old. So then he goes out of the car and he starts searching for his mother. She must be in there somewhere. And he doesn't realize the mall has 5 floors and there's 600 stores. And then the mother comes to the car. She comes out another door when he went in another door and comes to the car. Oh, where's my son? Oh, he must be missing me. I better look for him. And then she goes back to the mall. So he's wandering all around the mall. Mommy, mommy, you know. And then the mother's wandering all around the mall. Baby, baby. So they're wandering, wandering, wandering. All of a sudden, then they find each other. Then what do? Oh, there you are, coming by. And they run. And she picks up the baby. Oh, my baby. I missed you so much. And he said, I missed you so much. And like this. So she's searching for the child intently, very intently. And the child is very intently searching for the mother. So this is something like bhakti, that we are trying to search very intently for Krishna, search out for Krishna in the heart, in the hearts of others, in our environment, and wherever we go, we try to search for Krishna. Then he's also searching for us. He's wandering. He's looking, where? We're in the heart and he's in the heart. There's no one closer to us than Krishna, no one dearer to us than Krishna, nearer or dearer. But somehow he's not finding us, and we're not finding him. So this is, yeah, like, he knows where we are. Well, no, maybe not.
It's best service to Krishna, help ours come close to Krishna.
Yes, it's also good to help others to search for Krishna also. Because then if you're searching for Krishna and you enlist a few other people searching, then someone is bound to find him. Just like when Lord Chaitanya, when he got jumped in the ocean in Puri, and he merged into the pastimes of Krishna doing Jal Keli in Jamuna with the gopis in Braj Leela. So he's absorbed in that pastime. And then, this is in the middle of the night, because he saw the Yamuna dancing under the waves of the full moon night in Puri. It was in the summertime, when Radha and Krishna usually have Jal Keli in the Yamuna. So he saw the moon rays, full moon shining on the waves, and it was glistening. The water was moving like this, so it's shimmering and glistening. And at night, and with the full moon, it looks so much dark blue, just like Shyam's body, beautiful blue color. And then Lord Chaitanya ran and he jumped in the ocean, then he got washed away. Then when all the devotees came to Gambira, they couldn't find him, and all the doors were open. There were three locked doors, all the doors were locked. The doors were all locked, but somehow he escaped. Of course, some people say there was actually an underground tunnel. There was an underground tunnel that went from the Gambira. It went under and came up in the deity room of Kashi Mishra's deity. It was, what's the name? Radhakant. Radhakant is the name of the deity. And then from there he would go out that door and go out. It's kind of very, very tricky. But anyway, at any rate, he got out. And then when the devotees came to see that he wasn't there, they became completely broken, devastated. And everyone went down to the beach and they said, oh, they followed his footprints or something. He must have come here. Then they split up and they went searching for the Lord. Some went south, some went north, and they went all over the place looking. So this is the point of preaching, that you engage others and trying to search for the Lord. And so that will increase your chances of finding the Lord. Like if only one person is, you lost someone, you say, oh, look, and you get 10 people, look, my little boy looks like this. He's blue in color. He has lotus eyes, and he has long, long, wavy hair, and he stands like this. And he's very beautiful, and he wears a yellow dhoti. And so you look for him, you search for him. So you get 100 people, 200 people. There's so many. So if 200 people are searching, then someone's bound to find. So that's why preaching increases your chances of finding Krishna, because you're searching for Krishna, and preaching means to engage other people in searching for Krishna. Right? And then if you're such an advanced preacher, if you're so advanced in Krishna consciousness that you've actually found Krishna, then you can give some tips. You can give some tips to your students or to those who you're preaching to. You can give some hints and tips how they can easily find Krishna.
And also sometimes students help Guru to find Krishna.
No, that's what I'm saying. That's the whole idea, that the students help. I mean, it depends on the level of the guru. If the guru is dancing himself with Krishna, like Bilva Mangala Thakur or Madhavendra Puri, Krishna was coming every day bringing him milk. So he didn't need any students, although he had so many students. Madhavendra Puri had many students, like Advaita Acharya and Ishwar Puri and Who?
Paramahanda.
Nityananda was in Madhavajapuri?
No.
Or Lakshmi, I think it was Lakshmi Pankhi's disciple. I mean, Paramahanda Puri, I mean, and Advaitacharya, he had so many disciples, but he didn't depend on any of them to find Krishna for him. He sat on the banks of Govinda Kund, and Govinda himself came every day with a pot of milk from Madhavajapuri. But this is the point that preaching helps us find, if we can more quickly find Krishna this way. So in the Bhagavatam it says, Savai Pumso Puro Bhaktir. Yata Bhaktir Hoshijay, right? What's the rest of the verse? Ahoitaki Apratiyata Yeyatma Supersedati. So this is a very beginning of the Bhagavatam. The rishis, they ask a question. This, of course, the verse is the answer. But the question is, what can ultimately satisfy the self? Because there's so many things and so many pursuits or attainments which we think will satisfy ourselves. People, places, money, position, glory, name, fame, relationships. So then this is the answer. Ye Atma Supersedati. The Atma can be completely satisfied by what? By love. Love of Krishna. Loving service of Krishna. What can completely ultimately satisfy the self? Complete satisfaction means, what does it mean, complete satisfaction? Any answers? What does it mean in complete satisfaction?
Complete.
Content.
Your consent. Preeti?
To serve?
To serve. Complete, because in other words, sometimes you say satisfaction, and so the satisfaction also means contentment. It's another synonym. Synonym. But what does it mean? We're saying complete. So that's what we call an absolute statement. Complete. This is it. Purnam. Purnam. Purnam tushta.
Nothing else is required.
Yeah. Nothing else is required.
Dependent and surrender.
Huh?
Dependent and surrender.
What?
Dependent on surrender.
Dependent on surrender?
And serving.
No, I'm asking for the
satisfaction.
Dependence and surrender.
Dependence and surrender. No, that's not what we're talking about here. Complete satisfaction means... All right, let me put it another way. Now you can understand it by analogy. If I give you a big plate of prasadam, and you eat, and you eat, and you eat, and you eat... Or let's say you honor, and you honor, and you honor. Prasadam. Then I say, do you want any more? Or kuch? You say, kuch ne. You say, are you satisfied? And are you completely satisfied? And then you say, yes. So what does that mean? That you don't want any more. Right? So complete satisfaction means that after this, you don't desire something else. So this is the question the sages are asking. What can ultimately satisfy the self? What can give complete satisfaction to the self? What is a thing that when you get it, you don't want anything else? And that's bhakti, love, Krishna prema, the loving service of the Lord. When you receive, so this is the sages who have studied humanity and preached to humanity and dealt with varna and ashram, dharma and everything. They said, listen, we've heard it all, we studied it all, we read it all, and they're asking, Sutta Goswami is asking, Sukadeva, that's what I'm asking, who's asking the question? These questions were asked. Sutta Goswami, and he's recounting what he had heard previously. So this is the question they're asking, what will ultimately satisfy? So that this definition is, after attaining this, you don't desire something else. Yeah.
In bhakti, we're never satisfied. It's real bhakti.
That's another point. Except for that, they don't want anything else. Because that's wanting more bhakti is the same thing. It's not different from bhakti. It's not something else. In other words, the thing is, after attaining this, you don't desire something else. Desiring more bhakti is not something other than bhakti. So it's not the point. That doesn't show another point. And once you have bhakti for Krishna, or devotion for Krishna, you don't, that's all you want. You want more and more bhakti. That's just more than the same thing. It's not something else. It's only bhakti, 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 and this much bhakti or that much, but it's only bhakti. It's not, I want bhukti and mukti and siddhis and this and that. No. Except for that, they don't want anything else. Bhakti, love of God, is that ultimate thing. In the material world, we always keep changing. Everything is changing. Because nothing else can fully satisfy the self with bhakti. So, today we have a yellow dress, and then tomorrow a blue dress, then a green dress, then a purple dress, then a pink dress, and it goes on and on. I'm tired of this. I'm not satisfied with this. I wore this 10 times. Let's throw it out. No, but it's cost so much. I don't care. Well, give it to the maid. The maid can have it or throw it in the trash. I don't care. I don't want anymore. But you only wore it 10 times. I'm fed up with it. So it's like a Babaji or something. They wear white. There's not even any color at all. It's just white, or a Grihastha man or something. He just wears white. What is? Of course, that's all colors. White is all the colors. White light is all colors. You put it through a prism, and you get the colors. A different vibration of light is different color. So that means that they don't have to change the cloth. The cloth is the same all the time. Now this is an interesting point. There's this. Now think of this concept, which we discussed before, and we're just repeating it because some people haven't heard it. There's such a thing as relationship based on love, and love based on relationship. You got it? There's two things. One is love based on relationship, and the other is relationship based on love. You got it? Mm-hmm. What's an example of love based on relationship? Well, make a little more development than 2 words.
Family. When you love somebody, feels for his brother, just by being born in the same family, the same house, then he naturally has some relationship of love.
Or at least he thinks he should. In other words, I took birth in this family. I'm Joe Jones, and this is my brother Bill Jones, and we are both Joneses. And he's my brother, and I suppose on spot I should love him because we have a relationship as brothers. We have the same father and the same mother, but I hate his guts. To put it mildly, in mild colloquial English, I really dislike my younger brother. I have no affection for him. I'm rather repulsed by him. We are karmically not matching. It's like this. But anyways, my brother, I guess I should, or I wish I should, or I have to, or I have to. But so that's an example of love based on relationship. I never met this guy before, but my father said I have to marry him because he likes the family. He said he's a good boy, so I respect my father, so I married him. But he's really a drip. And I can't stand him, but I want to have some kids, and there's nobody else around, and I shouldn't really have kids with anybody else besides my husband, so I might as well use this guy and get some kids out of him. So this is some kind of love based on relationship, but it's not a relationship based on love. Now, keeping that in mind. In the material world, love is based on physical relationship with another. However, in the spiritual world, especially Vrindavan, relationships with Krishna are based on love. Physical relationship is not important. The loving feeling is what's important. Krishna is actually the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. But the parental love of Yashoda and Nanda is so much greater. So Krishna always lived with them. For example, the gopis, they had a marital relationship with other men. But actually, although they were not married to Krishna, they had their conjugal love was for Krishna. So there was no official relationship. So their love was not based on a relationship. Their relationship was based on love. They would come together. Sometimes they would be together. Sometimes they wouldn't. It was just the way the movements of love are such as it. Krishna's Kaviraj said, "Love moves in a crooked way, like a snake. It's not predictable. Snake goes like this, right and left. And he goes like this way. You don't know which way. Doesn't go straight. So this is saying the Braja Gopis, they captured Krishna's heart, even though there was no relationship of Krishna as husband and wife. So the standard of measurement of who's the greatest devotee is a question of not seeing who lives with the Lord, but it's seeing who has more pure love for the Lord. This is an interesting point. Krishna is Atmaram, which means self-satisfied, and he enjoys by himself. And he's Aptakam, which means he has no desire to fulfill. But in a relationship of love, a devotee makes Atmaram Krishna give up his Atmaramata, like this Mamata, where we said Anya Vilashita in our Nectar Devotion class. Ta means a tendency to. Ta means the tendency to be Atmaram. So the devotee, his love is pure love. It makes Krishna give up his Atmaramata and become Bhaktaram, taking pleasure. He's Bhaktaram, taking pleasure from his devotee's love. Well, this is the power of love. That we have. What is our relationship with Krishna?
No.
Nothing. We can say we're some distant part and parcel of some part and parcel of Krishna. We're part and parcel and expansion of Krishna. Just like some of Krishna's devotees are part and parcel of his own body, and Radharani's own body. Then some of his devotees are part and parcels of Krishna, of Balaram's body, right? And then the Vasudeva, they have these different categories of expansions, and then their expansions. So this is our position. Yes.
So it looks like first relationship and then first duty relationship and then gradually love is.
No, that's exactly what we discussed, and that's why this is called love based on relationship.
Yeah.
That's tradition. So that what we're saying is that's not very strong in the spiritual world. There's another interesting point. In the spiritual world, Krishna, all his relationships are based on love. Like Balaram is actually not his brother. Balaram is Rohini's son, Rohini and Vasudeva's son. Vasudeva had 10 queens, and Rohini was one of them. So, but he loves Balaram more than his own self, and Balaram loves him more than his own self. So their love is not based on relationship. They don't have the same mother and father. So there's so much intensity, there's much more intensity of love when it's based, actually the relationship is more intense when it's based on love than when love is based on relationship. Because when love is based on relationship, it's almost like a forced love. Well, he's my husband, I guess I should serve him, I guess I should love him, I guess I should be nice to him because he's my husband. So love is kind of contrived. It's not spontaneous, and it's not self-generating just by the individual's character or presence. So this is the point that they're making. That's why the love of the Brijvasis is so superior, because everywhere else there's some formal relationships. Dasarath is the father of Ram, and Sita is the lawful wedded wife of Ram. So the love is based on these strong relationships, but it's rather contracted. It's not so expansive, and so that's why the Brijvasi or Braj Bhakti is so highly touted and glorified. Brijvasi's Prem, Vraja Prem. He loves his mother and father, and not his mother and father, he loves him more than anything. He's not his brother, and all his friends. A very interesting point that we heard is that And one of the interesting point of Vrindavan is, in every relationship, there's the mood of Parakiya Bhav. This is a very interesting point. Maybe we heard from Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Dev. He said, in Dasiras, there's Parakiya Bhav. In Sakiras, there's Parakiya Bhav. In Vatsalya Ras, there's Parakiya Bhav. And Madhurya Ras, there's Parakiya Bhav. Generally, you think, you may have thought, that only in Madhurya Ras, there's Parakiya Bhav. Because usually you think of Parakiya in terms of Utpati. Utpati Bhav. Pati and Utpati means a husband and an Utan. I'm one above. It's called Utpati. It's not Upapati, that's Hindi. In Sanskrit it's called Utpati. Utanpati or Ut means above the husband. So we say paramour, par amour, lover, and para means an additional or other one. Extramarital love, illicit love, illicit relationship. One husband and another husband, or another lover, or one wife, another wife. So this Swakya, generally the married wife, Rukmini and Dwarkadish, that's called Swakya Bhav, Lakshmi Narayan Swakya. Swakya, Swa means my own, Kya means belonging. Belonging to me. And Parakya means belonging to another. This is the meaning, belonging to another. Therefore, taking this meaning of Parakya Bhav, this is the highest love, because Krishna dances with the lady, the damsels of Braj, the girls of Vrindavan, the young ladies of Vrindavan, the Brajabadu. They belong to someone else, Parakiya. They belong to Abhimanyu and Govardhana Mala and Duramada and all these other other gopas. So obviously this is Parakiya Bhav, the Bhav, the mood, the love of being with someone else. It's not yours. She's not your lover. She's not your wife. And you're enjoying with her intimately and confidentially in conjugal relationship. So Krishna's having this conjugal relationship with all the young, the Brajavadu, the young married wives of Vrindavan. So that we have some understanding of, well, whatever we heard about it, let's say, understanding is a little bit, maybe not so easy with material brain. At any rate, now, when we examine Vatsalya Bhav, how do we trace out this concept of Parakiya Bhav? We trace it out like this. As the gopis are always thinking, they're always thinking, Krishna doesn't belong to us. We don't own him. We can't control him. We don't possess him. He's not my husband. Like wives say, well, this is my husband. Mamata. It's mamata. Or mamata. I possess him. And it gives them a sense of security. It gives a woman a sense of security, a sense of possession, a sense of control. My husband. This is my wife. Now, of course, it's all illusion, but at any rate, it serves its purpose. Carries people on in the samsara, life after life. But so the gopis are thinking, he's not ours. He came from Mathura. He could go back anytime. He may come tonight, he may not. Maybe he stays home with Yashoda. Maybe he has to go to a birthday party. Sridhan's birthday, Subal. We don't know. There's no surety that we'll meet. So there's always some anxiety. There's always a deep feeling of impending separation. And this Parakiya Bhav, it serves to intensify and to enhance the ecstatic feeling of union, or the ecstatic feeling of being with the beloved, of the gopis being with Krishna, and Krishna being with the gopis, because he knows that they're not mine. They belong to somebody else. They're somebody else's wives. So now in Vatsalya Bhav, how does this principle of Parakiya work? Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj are always thinking, our Krishna, he is a boy of Mathura. He's come from Mathura. We're only his foster parents. We've only adopted him. Like you go to an orphanage and you say, oh, there's a cute little boy. Oh, he has no mother and father. We picked him up on the street crying. And now he's 5 years old. So you adopt him. Then all of a sudden, 5 years later, knock on the door, donk, 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 big bunch of policemen, some papers. This is my son. And we're taking him. What?
No.
And the wife that has adopted that son, she could never have a child. She has some problem with the man or whatever. So now they've been giving everything to the son for 5 years. Now the police come. So you imagine if that lady was living with that mood every day, the father, mother might come. How much she would love that son, how much she would care for him. And then what would happen when the parents, those real parents would come, he said, I won't go with them. I'll jump off the window. I don't care who they are. I love this one more. So this intensity. So Mother Yashoda, Nanda Maharaj, they also have Parakiya Bhav. Parakiya Bhav is the undercurrent of all the relationships in Vrindavan. And that's what makes Vrindavan so superior to Ayodhya or Vaikuntha or anywhere else in the spiritual world. Parakiya Bhav. And it's all pervasive through all the relationships. Even in Shantaras. Now we're in Vatsalyaras, that Mother Yashoda and Nanda are thinking, our son, our Lala, he's also, people say he's Devaki Nandan. People say he's Vas, people, some of the rishis have come. Baguri Muni and Shandili Rishi and Garga Rishi, they've come and say, actually, he's also Devaki Nandan. He's Vasudeva Nandan. Shh. Sometimes they think about that time to time and they think, Yashoda, we could lose our son at any moment. We better make some more sweets. We better give him whatever he wants. He wants 5 new ball bats. You know, because he broke 3 yesterday. He ordered 5 more. Okay, immediately. Fatafat, I must make them. And then, you know, so they so much care for him. They smother him in kisses and just give him so much love so that he'll never think for a second about his real mother and father. So there's Parakiya Bhav and Vatsalya. And in Sakiras, there's also Parakiya Bhav. Because Sridham and Subal, Madamangal, the other, he's Brahmin, but the other coward friends and other friends, they're also thinking, our Krishna, he came from Mathura. And the same idea. And if we, just imagine if he leaves Braj and he goes back, he goes to Mathura. How could we live? Who would we play with? Who would we joke with? Who would we run with? We only live in the day so we can see him and be with him. And at night, we can only pass through the night by dreaming of him and seeing him in our swapna. But if he goes, we won't be able, we'll just go crazy. So we better really be nice to him and not pick on him too much, not tease him too much, and not make too much fun of him, and not push him in the mud too many times. And not defeat him. Subal has to think, I better not defeat him too many times, otherwise he may run to... So now the servants like Raktak and Patra, their house servants in Nandagram, they're in Dasyabhav, they're also thinking, actually, I mean, he's the son of the king, Brajaraj Nanda, and Brajeshri Yashoda. He's their son, and we're his servant. But still, this is we have a great privilege serving him, because we also heard he's from Mathura, and he could go back to Mathura anytime. So we better really do our service very attentively, because they're thinking that every day may be the last day. They're actually feeling like, because he doesn't belong to us. He doesn't belong, he's not really, we can't own his friendship, and we can't own his sonship, and we can't own his servitorship. We can't own him as a master. We can't control him because our master may leave us and go back to Mathura, and then we're out of it. We have no service. We're no more house servants. We can't be house servants without a master. So even in Dasya Bhav, there's Parakiya Bhav is impenetrated into this relationship. So this is the unique, that's why they say that Braj is a plane of desperation. All the servants become desperate by the very nature of the arrangement. The relationship with Krishna, it's purely the relationship is purely based on love. Not only love, but Parakiya Bhav. This is Brajadam.
Is this in Naimittik Lila?
This isn't both. Because even there, he's coming and going to there he's also coming and going to Mathura. There he goes for a day and comes back. Goes in the morning, comes back in the afternoon. Here he comes back after 3 months. And he comes and then goes and comes. That's told in Garga Samhita and other places. Yes?
Maharaj, if Krishna with the gopis, I can understand that there's Bali Kirva. But Krishna with Yashoda Mani and Maharaj, Krishna with the other friends, how does Krishna see Nand Baba and Yashoda Mani? Actually, there is one Leela where the friends tease him. That Yashoda Mai and Nand Maharaj are not your real parents, and how come you're black, and stuff like that. But then Yashoda Mai convinces him, no, no, I'm your mother, I'm your father. So, how does Krishna see the parents? How does Krishna see the friends?
No, this is from the servant's viewpoint looking towards Krishna.
It's not from Krishna to.
It's not presented that way. You could also present it that way. This isn't the angle that's presented in terms of this problem. But you can also present it that way. If I presented it that way in terms of Madhurya Bhava, that Krishna's thinking they don't belong to me. So Krishna can also think, because that's also there when Krishna does go to Mathura, then Devaki and Vasudeva and the other, the Nandagram Vasis, they don't want him to go back. So they try to smother on so much love that he says, I have to go back to Yashoda Nanda. He said, no, they don't forget about them. And he said, no, I'll just go back for a day, then I'll come back to you. But they won't let him go. They said, no, you stay here, don't go back. Because they know that they know, Vasudeva Devaki, that Yashoda Nanda's love is superior. And if he goes even for a day, they'll forget, he won't come back to Mathura. So they try to basically kidnap him and keep him in Mathura. So Krishna, it's not presented that way by the Acharyas. But you can think of it that he might say, well, I'm here with Yashoda Nanda, but I don't know how long I'm here receiving their love. Because I've come from Mathura. They are my foster parents. They're looking after me because of fear of Kamsa. I was brought over here. You know this story. So I'm being protected here till I grow up. And even there's some pastimes that were explained. Some acharyas explained that Krishna went to Vrindavan just to learn wrestling. He came to Vrindavan. He was born in Mathura. Then he came to Gokul in Vrindavan, and he grew up and he wrestled all the time. And he learned wrestling from everybody as possible. And he challenged everybody. Then when he was confident enough in wrestling, then he knew he could defeat Kamsa. Then he was, the Yogamaya arranged for him to be invited for a wrestling match. So he was in training. running 20 kilometers every day behind the cows, running 20 kilometers, climbing trees, like rope climbing trees, wrestling with his friends, eating muck on a mystery. They said he was all in training. Like you have a coach, the coach says, okay, eat 1 kilo of protein powder, lift weights for 2 hours, go in a sauna, get a massage. They have all these guys, heroes, they do training. You got one in the back there. You eat 1,000 rupees a day, protein powder. So you get 27-inch biceps. And you go in the movies, a hero, you'll see my chest, So Krishna was here on training, 11 years in training. Right? He was 10 years and 7 months when he left Braj for the match, for the Olympics. Like you read about some great chamis. Yes, I trained for 9 years. You read about these Olympic guys that win gold medals. I would get up every day at 3 o'clock and start training. 3 o'clock in the morning, instead of chanting japa, they're training, lifting weights, running 27 miles every day, and to win some stupid medal to hang around your neck and stand on a box for 1 second. You stand on a box for 5 seconds and they hang a medal around your neck, and then you spend 12 years of your life to get that. Stand on a box. There's 3 boxes, 2 and 3, and number 1. So to get stand 6 inches above the other 2 boxes, stand on a box 6 inches above the other guy and hang a medal around a gold medal instead of silver or copper. And you sacrifice 12 years of your life. Give up eating. They have no illicit sex. They don't have illicit sex. They don't gamble. They don't drink. They don't eat meat. Well, they eat meat, probably. But they give up. They follow practically 3 out of 4 regulated principles. Sleep about 3 hours a day. Train for 21. for 12 years and then they just get to stand on a box. I stand on boxes so many times when I'm moving my books here and there. I never got a gold medal though. I guess I can get one now. My friend's selling gold medals. So this Parakiya Bhav can be seen that way. You might be thinking, this love is so great that I'm receiving for Nanda Maharaj, and they're so intimate. I'd love to be with them because I can pull Maharaj, Baba's beard, and I can play with his Yashoda. But when I go to Devaki and Vasudev, they're going to stand there with folded hands and, oh, Bhagavan, hey, Bhagavan, Narayan, just that. It's no fun. I don't want to go over there, but I'm afraid maybe they take me back to the orphanage. They adopted me, took me out of the orphanage. So there's Parakiya Bhav on his side also. Just as everything is saying, from his viewpoint. Oh, I'm with all these friends, they're so nice, but maybe they take me off the, maybe they take, God, I'm with these, what my friends, we're going through the mud and dirt and we're running in the forest behind the monkeys and chasing the frogs and jumping in the Yamuna. But if I go to Mathura and lose the friendship of these, I'm going to be a prince, a Yuvaraj. Here I'm just a dirt bomb boy. Playing in the cow dung, swimming in the Jamuna, running up and down the mountains. I'm just carefree. I got a peacock feather in my hair. I'm wearing copins, running up and down the street. Or nothing. I just have some tinkling bells around my waist, and the tiger's nails around my neck. And I'm Digambara. But if I go there, I'm the Yuvaraj of Maharaj Vasudev. Kshatriya. I have to wear very formal clothes. Always have 3-4 guards beside me, guarding me with big guns. And he's the prince, the future king. You follow? So he's saying he's afraid. Oh, if I lose my friends, I have to go there. So there's Parakiya Bhav from his side also. You understand? Yeah. And if I have Raktak and Patrak there in Dasya Bhav. And they're so friendly with it. Sometimes when they're dressing me, I take my flute and I go tonk. And I hit them on the head when they're tying my ankle bells on my ankles, and I feel in a playful mood, hey, dong, and they go, oh, that's so nice. And then they just laugh, and I can be so fun with them. And then sometimes, when they're dressing me, they pinch me in the back, like, hey, what are you doing? But when I go there, they know, if I get servants over there in the palace of Maharaj, they'll be so careful. Oh my God, this is the Yuvaraj. This is the son of the king. We better be careful. If we don't do it right, we'll get it. They'll be very, yes, sir, yes, sir. You understand? Yes. So there's also Parakiya Bhav. Either way you want to look at it. Beautiful conception of the superlative love and relationships that Krishna's having in Braj.